Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Tim Kirchen is officially ready to go, and that sounds good to me. I like that an awful lot.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
As we get into our 4 o'clock hour here on 95.7 The Game, we're about 24 hours removed from what was a very good midsummer classic. The All-Star Game went well. Loved the cutaways in the broadcast. Loved that they did live on-field interviews, even during an at-bat, which I know might upset some of the old stalwarts, but I thought it was great. I thought the Home Run Derby was an awful lot of fun, and to talk about that, the trade deadline, which we're getting closer to in baseball's second half, I'm happy to bring in a guy who loves the game, writer for ESPN, baseball's Tim Kirchen. It is always good to have you on. Tim, I got Matt Kolsky and, unfortunately, Ray Ratto with me here today. Can you deal with this?
Yes, I can deal with Ratto. I've learned how to deal with him, but he makes me laugh out loud a few times every time I see him, so better get used to that.
Wait, so if you've learned how to deal with him, can you give us any tips?
Yeah, just let him go. Just let him say whatever he wants. That's when he's at his best.
Well, on that note, I will cede the first question to Mr. Ratto.
Does one deadline this year rather than the traditional two mean that that Major League Baseball will be closer to the festival of money burning that we got from the NBA this year? Or will the market be more depressed because there's just a greater reluctance to do anything?
Yeah, great question, Ray. And I think from the GMs I've spoken to, there's going to be a tremendous amount of conversation and activity up to the 31st of July, because everyone knows you don't have acquired a player by then, he's not eligible to play in the postseason. However, with all those National League teams, 12 of them, I believe, that are within 4.5 games of a playoff spot, every one of those teams says, hey, we might be in this. So the sellers aren't what they used to be. And I had a GM tell me this morning, with this many teams in it, this many teams looking to improve, and not enough teams ready to sell, we might not have as much activity. So this will be fascinating to watch. The next 3 weeks is going to be filled with this stuff, all sorts of rumors, up until the 31st.
Tim, when it comes to the deadline, there's no bigger name in the Bay Area than Madison Bumgarner. What Farhan Zaidi and the Giants might fetch for him, what we thought he might be worth, and what he's actually going to be worth, two different things. What do you think he commands on a market?
Well, I saw him pitch in person at the ballpark, 2 weeks ago, and he threw really well. I mean, he looked like the Madison Bumgarner of old, and I think he's pretty darn close to being a difference maker in a pennant race. I think he's pretty darn close to being a guy that can turn a contender into a champion. That's how much I think of that guy. But Farhan also thinks that much of Bumgarner, and he's not going to let him go unless he gets maximum return. And it'll be interesting to see if the Braves or the Phillies or the Brewers or the Twins or the Cubs or some other team really comes up with enough to get him, because you're not going to find guys out there like him at this age who have this kind of track record. So I think the Giants are going to hold out, and this is going to go right to the end. I think they're going to deal him, and Farhan, who's a very smart guy, will get the maximum return for Bumgarner, and I think it's time to go. They have to rebuild that team, and he is the best way to rebuild it.
I would imagine that both for positional reasons and romantic reasons, there is significantly less attachment to Will Smith, but I might argue he could have just as big an effect on a playoff race, especially with a few contenders desperately needing back-of-the-bullpen help. What do you see his market as?
Yeah, it'll be a great market for him, in part because I don't think Brad Hand of the Indians is going anywhere. I don't think Sean Doolittle of the Nationals is going anywhere, which leaves very, very few closers available, but Will Smith is one of them. He hasn't blown a save all year. He's got great stuff, and I think he's perfect for the Red Sox, perfect for the Braves, perfect for the Twins, perfect for several teams. And again, this is where Farhan's going to sit back and say, give me your best offer. He's going to have a lot of teams interested. I think Will Smith will move, and I think the Giants control basically the bulk of the trade deadline because they have two of the most marketable commodities that people are looking for.
Are the A's buyers, sellers, or sit back and watchers?
I think they sit back, Ray. I think certainly they don't have the money to really go out and get the perfect guy. They're not in a position to just rent somebody for two months, you know, give up a bunch of picks there or young players to get him and then lose him. So I think they're going to try to win with what they have now. I don't see them moving anybody because they have a chance to make the playoffs. That fourth and fifth playoff spot is open, I believe, and they have a shot at it. So I think they sit pat and they try to win what they have now.
Do you think A.J. Puck or Jesus Luzardo will be on their roster in September?
I do. I was told all along they'll be back in July. Well, I don't think that's going to happen, but I have to think that they are going to be in a position to help the A's at some point this year. Those guys, if they come back, and again, it's an if, but if they do, those are two power arms. Granted, not proven on any level, but we've seen young guys come up from the minor leagues and make a difference in August and September and then October. So it should be real interesting to see how those guys progress.
Tim Kirkchen here on 95.7 The Game. You catch him on ESPN. All of our guests appear on the Dial Pad guest line. Dial Pad helps you make smarter calls. Tim, I was really disappointed to see Bud Selig, to me, the steroid commissioner, get into the Hall of Fame before players who actually produced during the steroid era were allowed in. I'm not happy with the way, history is judged an awful lot of that era. Besides that, I can't believe this guy is breaking one of the sacred rules that he used to have with not taking attention away from baseball spectacles. For him to be going on a book tour and just destroying Barry Bonds every chance he gets, it just seems so wrong for this guy to be using this moment to try to sell a book. Like, I didn't like Bud Selig much to begin with, and congratulations, Bud, I like you even less now.
Well, I guess the timing can be considered odd when we want all, news suspended during the All-Star break so baseball can celebrate for 3 days. And that really was a very good game last night. So I guess I see your point. But as you know, when you're selling a book, and we've all tried to sell a book, you go when you can. And granted, the timing wasn't perfect, but I certainly don't share your anger about this because I don't think it was intentional. It's just this is the timing of the book.
As somebody who has been sort of attached to the Baltimore Orioles for most of your adult life, is this the worst Orioles team you've ever seen? And when will it stop being the worst team you've ever seen?
It's just mean.
Well, worst team I've ever seen was the 88 Orioles, who I covered for the Baltimore Sun. And they lost their first 21 games to start the season. Frank Robinson took the Riders out after consecutive loss number 18. So halfway through dinner, 1988, I asked Frank, has anyone interesting called you lately to offer support? He goes, yeah, the president called me today. So Frank was a big kidder. I pushed him three times on it. He said, damn it, the president of the United States called me today. I said, Frank, what did he say? He said, Frank, I know what you're going through. And Frank said, Mr. President, you got no idea what I'm going through. That's how bad the Orioles were. And this team has a chance to be way worse long term. Remember, the 89 Orioles nearly made the playoffs when they redid their whole team. This team is going to struggle for minimum of 5 years and maybe longer. At least they have a plan in place. But they're starting from so far behind, there are going to be several 100-loss seasons back-to-back-to-back here.
That's officially a new level of team sympathy, presidential sympathy. Wow.
That was a really bad team.
I have found, Tim, and especially, you know, with the Home Run Derby generating so much excitement and a pretty good All-Star game last night, strangely, even when baseball has its, some of its best moments, the conversation we end up having is about what can baseball do differently to be better and to be more appealing to younger people and a wider demographic. And I'm just wondering, as a guy who spent, you know, a lifetime in this game, if there are for you sort of pet ideas of here are some things that the sport could do to maybe broaden its appeal and brighten its future.
Well, we have too many home runs. We have way too many strikeouts. We have too many walks, which is what separated the All-Star game last night. We had hitters last night actually going up and swinging the bat and trying to put the ball in play. We had pitchers actually challenging hitters, not being afraid, and trying to create some contact. And it wasn't a home run derby for once, and that was refreshing to watch. That's the change that has to be made. We have to get away from this all-or-nothing approach. Too many homers, too many strikeouts, not enough in between. But to me, the only way to start that, to fix that, is to start with our 12-year-olds in the batting cage and say, look, you're going to learn to hit it over there now. You're going to learn to hit it on the ground here. You're not going to worry at age 12 about exit velocity and launch angle, because believe me, a lot of our 12-year-olds know all about that. That's where it has to start to be, because I think it's too late for most of our hitters in the big leagues who have this one swing that they've been using since they were 12 years old, and now to ask them to make a gigantic swing change in the middle of a season when they're facing Max Scherzer tomorrow, good luck with that. I think that's the only way to correct the biggest issue in the game, and that correction is going to take years and years come about.
Tim, have we got a juiced baseball?
We have a harder baseball. I've had a dozen players tell me this is harder than the one of, say, 3 years ago. I've had players tell me it's a smaller baseball. I've had many players tell me the seams aren't raised as high, meaning less resistance. Even Major League Baseball has acknowledged that. And the problem is, when the ball is that hard, it travels farther, and all the little guys in the game, with all due respect, the Tommy LaStellas of the world, think, I can go deep here. So they're all swinging as hard as they can, which raises the strikeout rate. Maybe if we can deaden the ball a little bit, I'm not sure how you do that. The little guys say, well, I can't go deep anymore. The ball isn't flying like last year. It won't affect the big guys. But if the little guys now say, all right, I got to shorten up, I got to put the ball in play, I actually have to make contact more often, I think that will start to begin to solve the problem that we have right now.
This is a question that nobody else on the planet cares about anymore, but I'm asking it anyway. Is the idea of the Tampa Bay Rays timesharing with Montreal dead, dying, or does it have some sort of weird life left to it?
I think it's dying, Ray. I don't think it was ever truly alive. I think, like most of us, everyone thought this was just another ploy to try to get St. Petersburg, Tampa, the Rays, and everything a new stadium, because that has to happen if that franchise is going to move forward. They need a new ballpark, or they need a new site, or both. And I think this was I just don't see how it could work splitting 40 and 41 in two different places. Why would St. Petersburg go along with that? Montreal might, but I don't see that happening. I think it causes too many issues. I think it was an interesting story when it happened, but I don't think it has legs.
Well, damn it.
Tim, thank you very much for joining us. I love how much you love baseball. I don't think I'm speaking for Ray there, but I certainly do. Appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your break and enjoy the second half.
Okay, guys. Thanks so much.
Tim Kirkchin here on 95.7 The Game. Awesome to talk to him as always. When we come on back, it's officially time for a name game. 888-957-9570 to get in line right now. The name game starts next after Elena tells you what's also coming up here on 95.7 The Game.
Thank you, Damon. What's happening on The Game brought to you by Ticket Crushers. The celebrity call-in contest just keeps getting better. Don Nelson, Steve Wozniak, and Tommy John have all called in today. Who will we hear from next?
This week, we're giving you a chance to win $5,000 courtesy of Dialpad on the Damon Bruce Show. Get the biggest celebrity you know to call the show on your behalf. Biggest name of the day wins $1,000. The biggest name of the whole week gets $5,000. All courtesy of Dialpad. Full contest details at 957thegame.com. If you missed the Wozniak surprise call-in, I podcast it online. Check it out on demand at 957thegame.com. We'll also replay it coming up right around 5:30. The name game is next. We've got a sweet prize for that, too. Kings of the West tickets at SAP with Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, The Game, E40, and more. So start lining up to play. I'm Elena Matsoukas on the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
They call it one of the slowest sports days of the year. No NBA, no NFL, no Major League Baseball, no hockey, obviously. That's why the ESPYs are tonight. That's why we're having a celebrity contest this week. It's been fun. We've had some amazing entrants today. If you would like to enter the celebrity contest, the number is 844-999-GAME. 844-999-GAME. We're having a different kind of contest right now. We're about to play the name game. Name game time. 888-957-9570 if you'd like to play the name game. What are we playing for today? We're playing for a pair of tickets to the Kings of the West. Well, what's that? Kings of the West is a concert coming to SAP Center on Saturday, September 14th. Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, and The Game. For more information, you can go to Ticketmaster.com. But we're playing for a pair of tickets to see the Kings of the West, Snoop, Cube, The Game. And the game is simple. An athlete, someone in sports with two first names. If you need further explanation, well, that's why we made this snappy open.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for
The Name Game.
Starring anyone with two first names.
What's your name?
My name?
Dirt first. It's a funny name.
What'd you say his name was again?
His name is Ricky. Ricky Bobby.
Ricky Bobby. He's got two first names.
Now, here's your host with two first names, Damon Bruce.
You get to ask a sequence of yes or no questions. A yes buys you another question. A no is going to buy someone else another chance. If you hear us hang up on someone, that line becomes available to you. Again, the number, 888-957-9570. We gave no clues today, but if you know how the game works, this isn't the hardest thing we've ever done.
I'll give one clue.
Don't do that.
It's not Chris Paul.
Not Chris Paul. That's a fair clue for everyone. This is Mojo in Tracy. Mojo, what is your yes or no question?
Are they in the East?
No.
The East of what?
Well, they're in the East of no. Nothing about this player is East, was East, maybe someday could be East, but not right now.
Did he go to East Carolina?
No, he did not. Thank you for asking. We go to Pat, Castro Valley. Pat, thank you very much for the phone call. What's your yes or no question?
Is this person involved in baseball?
No, the sport is not baseball. Thank you very much, but that was a good clue. We all know that we've been talking all-star game. You understand how the game works. This is Matt in San Mateo. Matt, what's your yes or no question?
Does he play basketball, NBA?
No.
We're narrowing it down.
No baseball, no basketball, no East Coast. 888-957-9570. A pair of tickets to go see the Kings of the West, Snoop, Ice Cube, The Game. All coming to SAP Center in September. This is Ivan in Hayward. Ivan, what's your yes or no?
Do I play football?
Yes. What is your next question?
Do they play for a Bay Area team?
Yes.
Are they currently a part of the Oakland Raiders?
No.
Ah, oh, so close.
Narrowing it down, though. Narrowing things down. Jeff in Sunnyvale. Jeff, what's your yes or no question?
Do they play for the 49ers?
Yes.
Is it Trent Taylor?
No.
Not a bad guess. That's
not a bad guess.
That qualifies.
Thank you very much. This is Sev in San Jose. Sev, what do you got? Your yes or no question.
Is he a DB for the Niners?
Yes, he is.
Richard Sherman.
Oh, hey. There you go. You got a winner? You got a winning soundbite? There you go. There we go. That round of applause, Sev, is for you. Is Sev on hold again? You take care of that? I don't want to touch another button. I might hang up on poor Sev by accident. I've done that before. I won't do it again. Sev, congratulations. Richard Sherman was our answer today. Someone's like, you should have gone with Tommy John.
If only we'd known he was going to call in.
We picked the winner before we got to Tommy John, who called in for the celebrity contest, which is why Richard Sherman was the answer. Richard Sherman called us yesterday for the celebrity contest, had a great conversation with the 49ers defensive back, and he's feeling better than ever.
I'm feeling great. I am feeling really good. You know, I've had a great offseason just training, just pushing my body and getting my muscles stronger. Feeling better than ever. I'm looking forward to starting training camp. You know, all this time you start to get the itch, and I think we're ready to go.
Ready to scratch that itch. Guys, usually after tearing an Achilles, whatever they look like in year one, it gets better in year two. I was impressed with how he played in year one. When did Richard feel like he could trust his leg again? I think, Ray, you asked him that. Here is what he said.
It was around the Giants game last year, and I started to just feel springy. Like, I started to feel spring. I started to feel a pop in my step and in my gallop and in my run, and that's when I knew that I was feeling a lot better.
Hopefully he's feeling springy this year. His newest teammate, Nick Bosa, obviously came with a little controversy attached to that draft pick. We asked Richard about it. Here's what he said.
Last I talked to him, he was feeling good. I don't think it's going to be an issue in terms of, you know, him showing up to training camp, you know, but I could be wrong. He seems like a guy who's bought in, a guy who looks forward to being a part of this team and to helping us in the way they brought him in here to help.
There he is. By the way, in other Niner news,
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang,
says he's going to be ready to go. Day one, practice, bring it on.
Richard Sherman said he looked ready to go in OTAs. Let's do this.
I like that.
Yeah.
Ray?
Well, no, I was going to change the subject, but I didn't know if you guys were done yet.
No, go ahead.
No, another name game possibility would have been Don Nelson.
Oh. Don Nelson.
Who else didn't know was calling.
That's a good point.
Again, he scares.
Steve Wozniak would not work for the name
I've
game.
I've never met a Wozniak.
That's not true. You don't know what there are people in Poland whose first names are,
you know,
close.
You make a fair point or close.
Well, I don't want to assume knowledge That's of Polish fair. Names That's that I fair. May not have.
I know there's some Kolskis.
Assuming Polish knowledge has made a lot of people look weird in their lives.
Bum, bum, ba, ba.
Now's not a good time to do it. 888-957-9570 is the number. We've got the celebrity contest sponsored by our good friends at Dialpad continuing throughout the end of today's show. You know someone famous, have them give us a call. Could put $1,000 in your pocket before the end of today. The grand prize winner will be announced on Friday. The most celebrityist, if you will, of all of our celebrity contestants is going to win $5,000. That is going to happen tomorrow. The winner of no $1,000 in last night's All-Star game was?
Bottom of the seventh, two-run game again. And here is Gallo, and there it goes. Home run, Joey Gallo. He didn't wait around.
Will Smith gave up that home run during the All-Star game. Joe Buck with the call on Fox. Tim Kirkjian joined us earlier this hour, asked about Will Smith. He said,
very, very few closers available, but Will Smith is one of them. He hasn't blown a save all year. He's got great stuff, and I think he's perfect for the Red Sox, perfect for the Braves, perfect for the Twins, perfect for several teams. And again, this is where Farhan's going to sit back and say, give me your best offer. He's going to have a lot of teams interested. I think Will Smith will move, and I think the Giants control basically the bulk of the trade deadline because they have two of the most marketable commodities that people are looking for.
That's the first time I've had anyone on the show tell me about what a bevy of talent and how in control of the trade market the Giants might be when we officially open up baseball's trading deadline 3 weeks from today, as a matter of fact. Madison Bumgarner, who we all know has been a little bit of an up-and-down player due to injury concerns, velocity, all sorts of reasons to be concerned. You know, how does he look tonight is something we breathlessly anticipate in what is, what, three more starts in a Giants uniform?
Yeah, it looks like the most.
Yeah, three
if,
more
if
starts.
If he's traded.
If he is traded. when you listen to Tim Kirkjian talk about the value that he might get attached to, that Will Smith might bring you as much, maybe even more, based on the desperation of a team adding a closer or a preeminent setup guy, maybe the Giants are going to have a little bit more for us in terms of this trade deadline than we've been anticipating because we've been just down on them.
I'm not sure that that's true, though. I mean, with all due respect to Tim, whose knowledge of the market is as good as anybody's, there's still 3 weeks, and there are so many teams that look like they're factors now that could fall off between now and the deadline. I think the market for relievers in particular is going to become more plentiful. I don't see Pittsburgh hanging on, which means that Felipe Vasquez is in the talk. If San Diego falls off, Kirby Yates is a better choice as a closer for the market than Will Smith is.
What makes you say that?
He's had a much better year.
A much better
and
year?
Cheaper. A much better year.
Will Smith hasn't blown a save. How much better
he's had more
be?
Opportunities to have a much better year. Will Smith can only work with what the team hands him.
Okay, nevertheless, well, this is not about whether Will Smith is getting screwed out of opportunities.
Well, it is if that's...
I'm saying that Kirby Yates will be a more attractive player to go after than Will Smith if he goes on the market. And I think Felipe Vasquez will too. It's just that they're not out of the race yet.
Felipe Vasquez is going to get a monster boatload of talent back.
I don't know if it's a – because I don't really understand what the new market is because teams like to hoard their prospects as never before.
This is a pirate prospect for those of you scoring at home, by the way.
But, no, he's their closer now. He's been good for – this is probably the third year.
For the record, Will Smith is younger than Kirby Yates.
Well, I didn't say that he wasn't, did I?
You did, but
oh, okay.
That's only one issue.
I think he's better. I think he's more desirable. Well, and all I'm saying is, the market will not be only Will Smith. Just as I also don't believe that the market will only be Madison Bumgarner. I think the market will open up because there aren't going to be 13 teams in the National League that have a shot at the postseason at the end of this. Some teams will start losing the way they should. Pittsburgh is one of those, I think.
Padres 2 games out of the wild card. Don't know if they're looking at this as sellers, but you know, it's funny. We've been not really as much as Ray Daly beats Albie's what's the word I'm looking
brains
for?
Brains in?
Not hope. Enthusiasm.
Disabuses him of positivity.
Basically,
he shatters my hopes and dreams.
Yeah, he does.
What they're there for.
That's fair.
To be shattered, or is Ray there just to make sure that your hopes and dreams aren't carried to a place that is so absurd that you then turn around and shatter them even more greatly? Like, I think
that's
Ray
true.
Is trying to save you from yourself. And I'll tell you, Albie, you should thank him just a little bit. And even though you're mesmerized by this terrible baseball team being 5.5 back of the wild card, let me tell you, objects in the rearview mirror are not as close as they appear.
Let me ask you this.
Sometimes. And hold on. I really think that Farhan Zaidi's single greatest attribute this year will be not falling for that illusion.
That's exactly my perspective on who Farhan Zaidi is. Because here's how I put it. Because I was listening to another conversation on an earlier show about the idea of the wild card. For the sake of argument, over the next 3 weeks, let's say the Giants do not lose. Okay? So they hit the trade deadline.
A game up in the wild card.
8 to 10 games over .500.
Oh, God.
Okay? Then they're going to buy.
Yeah.
I disagree. I mean, it's not going to happen. But I think the beauty of Farhan Zaidi is he's not buying, period.
I don't know that we know that, given that he has no track record. But I'll tell you what, if all of a sudden the Giants are a hot item, I think it's going to be real hard for him to pull that old Chicago White Sox trick, which is to win like crazy, get within 3, and then dump everybody on the 30th. I don't know.
What do you think is the right move for the franchise?
Well, I'm assuming they're not going to win
game
between
now. But let's say they do. Let's say they at least got to a spot where they were within a game or two of a wild card spot at the trade deadline. What's the right thing for the franchise to do?
I think you win when you can, or try to win when you can. I know you love the future, but
it's not that I love the future, it's that I hate the present.
Well, okay, but you're not going to hate the present in 3 weeks if all of a sudden they don't lose.
No, I mean,
you will be mesmerized by recency bias.
No, I won't.
And so will everybody else.
That's what happened in 2016, and here we are in 2019 with a terrible team for the third straight season. That's exactly my point.
Right. Holding on
At the trade deadline, were you actually saying they need to just start losing people?
In 2016?
2016.
No, but that was a lot harder to see in 2016. In 2019, it's very clear that the future of this roster is nil.
All right, I just want to finish this.
Okay.
If all of a sudden they don't lose between now and the 31st, they're going to be 13 games over. I mean, that's a ridiculous number, and the fact that we're even discussing this is madness.
Right. I shouldn't have said win every game, but let's say they get themselves to a wild card position. I still think the right move is to trade whatever you can for whatever young assets you get back, because sneaking in as the second wild card in a year where all of your players are on decline and you have no hope in your organization is valueless in my mind.
Then how are they winning these games?
Look,
Farhan
Zaidi's number one job this year is to not fall for the old banana in the tailpipe.
Exactly. That's what the point I'm trying to make. His number one job is to make sure that they don't once again double down on old talent that has no future.
Well, who's to say the old talent will be what's driving them?
If you're telling me that we get...
Then trade it.
Connor Joe is back?
No.
Leading the way?
Then you trade the old... Then that's... If they're not helping, then of course you trade them.
Okay. But that still means that they're in the market. To acquire something, because you're not trading old unproductive guys if they're not the ones driving this comeback, and I don't believe that those guys could drive the comeback. They'd have to do it with pitching and defense, because they're not going to hit their way out of this.
I get your
logic, and most of me agrees with it, but in the scenario you describe, I think it's not as cut and dried.
We're sitting here talking about an almost fictitious
scenario.
No, it's, I brought up a fictitious scenario simply to make the point that the next 3 weeks of baseball, if I'm Farhan Zaidi, the next 3 weeks of baseball mean nothing to me.
Right. You know, I don't care where this goes because I know where it started.
Connor Joe.
If it starts
exactly.
with
Connor Joe,
it's got to end with some action at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
You can't start with
Connor Joe
and end with playoffs. It just doesn't. That's not how that song works. 888-957-9570.
We need more Albie singing on the show, I think, is the main lesson here.
There was something that... I don't know about that.
I can make that happen.
No, I actually do know about that, and no, we don't.
There was something that today was... Look, what if they started creating acronyms based on your name that they wanted to exalt you so much that, Matt, no matter what you did, we figured out a Matt Kolsky acronym? I mean, that would take a long time to put together a cogent thought out of M-A-T-T-K-O-L-S-K-Y.
Just Kolsky is fine. If they can figure out Draymond, I believe Kolsky is accomplishable.
There is a Draymond rating. Draymond is now a defensive metric that NBA teams will consider, adopt, some, all, maybe few. I do not know. In the interest of not crushing my radio show with a whole bunch of numbers that are going to sound really rough to you, let me just quickly go through this. 538 has a new metric called the Draymond rating. Draymond stands for defensive rating accounting for yielding minimal openness by nearest defender. Mouthful. Again, we tried to get an acronym out of Draymond. D, defensive. R, rating. A, accounting for. Y, yielding. M, minimal. Openness by. N, nearest. D, defender. In the interest of not making you drive off the road with giving you the equation, basically what we're measuring here is, did you make an attempt to get in a hand in the guy's face? You weren't positioned well defensively as either the primary nor the secondary defender. But when it came time to take the shot, you made an effort. Even if it's a token effort, you made an effort to get a hand in the face and present a little friction instead of absolutely no friction.
Albie and I were tossing this back and forth this morning, and I think the most cogent sort of real sentence I could come up with to try to describe this is, it's kind of like measuring the intimidation factor of your closeout.
In other words, if this guy is closing out on a shooter, how much of an effect does he have?
Essentially, the numbers have come back for players who have played thousands and thousands and thousands of on-court minutes. So no one here with a small sample size gets measured in this. This goes back several years. Draymond, 10,000 possessions. Draymond, the NBA has figured out that a wide-open player is going to hit a wide-open shot 42% of the time. Even token effort could reduce that percentage by as much as 8 points. So can you make in token effort to reduce that percentage by possibly 8 points? Again, this is getting way too deep into the numbers and the arithmetic. I don't want to do that. But essentially, they're trying to measure defensive effort, not acumen, but effort. Did you try?
And how much did your effort affect the opponent?
Why did they choose Draymond? Because when they went ahead and came up with this, they found out that he leads the NBA in closeouts, according to the now acronym that is named after him. Draymond is the number one person presenting a legit challenge to a shot that he wasn't in best position to actually defend. Green is followed by a star-studded cast of defenders who you would say, that guy's a stud. Joel Embiid, Kristaps Porzingis, Rudy Gobert, Tim Duncan, Andre Roberson, Anthony Davis. Meanwhile, the worst-rated Draymond-measured defender over the last six seasons, Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, not trying.
Very good Connect Four player, not going to get a hand in your face.
What's even more impressive to me about Draymond, and to be honest and fair, Andre Roberson being on that top list, is look at the other names. They're all seven-footers. That's because seven-footers are huge, and when they come closing out on you, even if they're not quite there, even if they're far away, it has an effect.
Right. Center, unicorn. Center, one of the all-time greatest players ever.
Who is arguably a center.
And a guy that the Los Angeles Lakers just traded their future for in Anthony Davis.
Right. And then it's Andre Roberson and Draymond are the only guys under 6'10", 6'11", on that top seven or whatever it is, because that's how effective they are getting out to shooters.
I think this is an awful lot of effort to find a way to put Draymond Green's name into a stat. Because I don't know. In fact, I find it difficult to see that 30 teams are all of a sudden going to use this as a way to measure defensive effort, when much of this is about perception more than it is about something statistic. It's just most coaches can see if a guy's made an effort, because the effort in and of itself tells you that. So I don't know that this is going to become anything other than a delightful little exercise to make an acronym.
It's a desire to quantify everything. And the equation spits out that Draymond provides the Warriors with 3.2 points better defensive effort per 100 possessions than the guy to his left or right. And the $64,000 question is this. Did they come up with this calculation and it spit out Draymond? Or were they looking at Draymond Green and came up with a calculation to try to explain him? I'd like to know which came first here, the chicken or the egg.
It might end up being the feathers. Only because I think they recognize this is something Draymond Green does. We should measure this for other players.
But
choosing the acronym basically becomes sort of a fait accompli. It's like, we've decided on X, now we're going to take a step backward to name it, and then we're going to see how it means, how it affects other players. And weirdly enough, people who make an effort on defense and are long and tall will rank very high on this, which I thought was something we all knew and understood already.
I think it can be useful to come up with numbers to quantify things that we believe to know and understand, especially when we've found out so many times over the years that the things we believe we knew and understood, we were wrong about.
But when you do this and you find out, yeah, I already knew this,
yeah,
then you don't have something new and unique.
Correct.
It's when you are surprised by the results that the statistic can actually become an effective tool.
Or it tells you
what you already knew.
Right.
I think you're just going, well,
nothing
I'm not
changes
using that.
Here. Doesn't change anything.
That is the Draymond rating. The Damon rating basically measures how ineffective you are before about 9:30 a.m. and at least one cup of coffee. Draymond's rating is determining what kind of effort you make. Interesting, new acronym.
If only we had a new acronym.
Don't sleep on Tom Ackerman, who, if he called,
okay,
if he called in today for the celebrity contest, would have trouble measuring up to maybe a few of our current contestants. But you still got a chance to get in. If you know a celebrity, someone who might win you $1,000, 844-999-GAME. That's the number to talk with us about your Draymond rating. That's 888-957-9570. We're guest-free the rest of the way, unless we slip a little Steve Wozniak past you next hour, because that happened today on the Dame and Bruce Show. Brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to the Dame and Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
So we have one reference. Matt Kolsky makes the mistake of complimenting Albie's singing voice while Ray is saying don't do it again. And what do you know? Give him an inch, she'll take a mile. Albie immediately puts up the other Connor Joe versions.
Connor Joe.
Fit and men for
Connor Joe.
I'd been married a long time ago. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from?
Connor Joe. Connor Joe.
Listen to the way he's getting a little lilt at the end.
Yeah.
He hits the notes, man.
He sold it.
Yeah.
I hit the falsetto, is that what they call it?
Yes.
Yeah. Sweet singing Albie Falouse.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's like Aaron Neville.
Got the bird, the voice just, of a baby canary bird.
Just like Aaron. Or was it Ivan?
He's like, that's Aaron Neville to a T. I nailed it. That's a perfect impression. Seriously, it's his entire thing.
What fresh hell is this?
All right. 888-957-9570. Draymond now has his own defensive metric. Whether it was named for him, after him, about him, really don't know. But it's another thing to measure in the NBA, and we love to know the NBA can measure everything it has right now. I got people who are measuring how fair this league is. A really good article by Greg Doyle in the Indianapolis Star where he talks about the Pacers, but I'm going to bring it back to the Golden State Warriors because I got a legit question about who really set this offseason in the direction that it's sailing in. But right now, let's go to Unspoken Dave in Livermore. Thank you for the call, Dave. What do you got?
Hey, so I got two questions for you guys, and I'll take the answer off air. First off, speaking of Draymond, is there a situation where if we give him the max, then in a couple of years we won't be able to give Curry the max? Because
no.
If that's a discussion,
it's
okay,
not.
Number two, that's good to know. Number two is, I read something the other day about the assignment for Sean Manea. Is there an update? Because if we're going to go to the playoffs, we're going to need him active.
Sean Manea was his rehab assignment was cut short because he had some soreness, I believe. So they're sending him back on a rehab assignment again, I think, as of yesterday. So he started a rehab. His oblique was sore. Set him back a couple of weeks. Starting rehab again now.
Jimmy in Palo Alto. What do you got, Jimmy?
He's not.
Hold on, Jimmy. Let me push your button so you can join the show. Hello, Jimmy.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Very well. Thank you.
I just thought it was funny with the, these Draymond ratings that obviously it's spread out over a 5-year period in which they're evaluating or rating those players. But if you actually looked at his last season, he actually didn't even make the top 50 in his own rating.
Yes.
That was pretty funny.
But I think if you were able to do that rating for the playoffs, I think he would fare much better. And I think Draymond himself would tell you that the first, 60 games of last season was not peak Draymond.
No.
Now we can argue about whether an NBA player who's paid millions of dollars ought to show up at peak level from the beginning of the season, but I'm not sure it's... The fact that he would have been low in those rankings last year, I don't think is as meaningful as his overall rating over the 5-year period.
All right. Let me read you a quick story. Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star. This is going to be, I know, Damon, is this about the Pacers? I don't care about the Pacers. This is going to sound like it's about the Pacers, but it's a bigger overall arcing thing that we're going to get into. Just be patient with me. Here we go. Greg Doyle writes, so the players have won. The biggest NBA stars now have demonstrated how powerful they are. We wake up to the news, not a puff of white smoke from a blessed chimney or anything that, but a Woj bomb telling us that the 2019 NBA Finals MVP Kawhi Leonard is now the early front runner for 2020 NBA Executive of the Year by choosing to sign with the Clippers, but only after engineering a trade to acquire Paul George from the Thunder. We awoke to the news, the confirmation reality that NBA superstars now run the NBA. They have all the power. They're the winners, the biggest NBA names, along with the biggest NBA cities. However, here in Indianapolis, how are we supposed to feel about that? And he says, look, the rest of the league is pondering its place in the NBA's roulette wheel right now. This game, the wheel is numbered 1 to 30, but some of those pockets, they're closed. They're a sucker's bet. The Pacers, sorry Pacers, might be one of them. Your pocket now feels closed. That little ball is never going to fall your way. Not if the game stays like this. Not if players have all the power. And what I'm not saying is it's wrong. Greg Doyle writes, I'm not saying that at all. This is one of those stories where everyone has an opinion. You know, one person's the NBA is broken is the next guy's the NBA is great. Pragmatically, he says, an NBA player is a commodity, yes, but it's also a person. And people have earned the right to choose where they work. NBA players earn the right to stay in the league long enough to become free agents, and they can do as they like. Great players want to win as badly as anyone in the league, perhaps more because they're playing for their legacy, not just a paycheck, and they've decided it's a lot easier if they form a so-called super team, and they have that right. But for everyone else, specifically a franchise like the Pacers in towns like Indianapolis, today is not a day to be, you know, Braveheart screaming freedom. Today's a day the guillotine fell on the rest of us. What is happening around the league is beautiful for a handful of players and a handful of teams. Others, you know, superstars are now gathering in groups, two by two, marching towards their arc in pursuit of an NBA championship. You either choose, you know, the Nets or the Clippers or the Lakers, and like six of the 10 best 15 players in the world hold everything in terms of competition in the palm of their hand. Greg wraps up saying it feels like the Pacers are left on the outside looking in. The bright side for them is that they're not alone. If your team is not in Los Angeles, if it's not in New York, if it's not seen as an ultimate destination for today's discerning NBA superstar, or does not luck into the proper ping pong ball in a draft lottery, today feels kind of empty. Does this feel like sour grapes? Maybe it is, but winter is coming, and around here, grapes don't grow. Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star. So he writes all of that. Pretty interesting. I understand his argument. I really do. This isn't just a problem, though, for the you're not cool enough to lure and choose a superstar Indiana Pacers. This kind of affects the Golden State Warriors. And I just want to ask the both of you, who do you think decided what this offseason would look like for the Warriors more? The owner, the GM, or the player?
Well, clearly it was Durant when he left.
Right.
The rest of it was just bad luck. But, I mean, Greg Doyle could have written that 5 years ago. He could have written it 10 years ago. He could have written it 15 years ago or 20 years ago.
No, I don't think so, Ray.
No, I completely agree with Ray.
Well, I think you could have written it at the beginning of LeBron going to Miami. Otherwise, the NBA was not a league of I'm awesome, you're awesome, we should go be awesome together. It wasn't.
That's not what he's saying it is. That's not his complaint.
He's saying that all the big cities get all the good guys all the time.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that now we
no,
got
but that's what he's saying, and that's what I'm talking about.
Well, and he's also saying that it's about players having more control over a team's roster future than a general manager. I mean, Kevin Durant told the Brooklyn Nets that he was coming via Instagram. Like, he didn't
Shaq
even officially let them know.
Shaq told the Magic he was going to be in Los Angeles with a press conference. What's the difference?
Will Chamberlain forced a trade out of San Francisco to Philadelphia, then forced a trade from Philadelphia to play for the Lakers.
Yeah.
That's in the 60s and 70s.
This
the
notion
biggest
that, yeah.
guys have always gotten to decide.
And the biggest guys.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar forced a trade from Milwaukee to the Lakers.
Kobe Bryant forced his way to the Lakers when the Charlotte Hornets drafted him.
So you're saying that there's nothing new in the NBA. Last week was not extraordinary in any way, shape, or form. Ho-hum, Kareem used to be a Buck. There's nothing to talk about?
No, the way it went...
Don't make that face.
The way it went down might be different. The fact that
big markets have an advantage and major players have all the control and determine the league has been true for virtually the entire history of the NBA. And anyone who tries to rewrite that, it's just sour grapes about whatever their team is not being successful today.
Here's what's different. It might be sour grapes.
Here's what's different is that Kawhi Leonard could get Paul George to force the Oklahoma City Thunder to trade him. And Kyrie Irving could force the Boston Celtics to move him to a place where he could get another player by his own existence. That's what's different. Well, but
what do you mean? When he left Cleveland?
No. When he left Boston, I mean, if I'm understanding the timeline correctly, he opted into Brooklyn before Durant did. Now, they may have done it hand in hand.
Right, but what does that have to do with Boston doing it?
I'm not talking about Boston.
Oh, sorry, you said Boston moved him. That's why I was confused.
I'm sorry. What I meant to say was that Kyrie Irving forced his way out of Boston because he wanted to go to Brooklyn.
Kind of, except that he was a free agent.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, that what's different is players who are currently under contract and who used to be under team control are now seizing that control. I mean, if Oklahoma City wanted to be hard noses about this, they could have said, we're not letting you go anywhere.
Well, and I think if they believed they had the makings of a title contender, they wouldn't have been so eager or willing to trade Paul George. But I think they saw the writing on the wall for themselves. This is the best outcome the Thunder could have hoped for, if you ask me. They weren't winning with that team. You just put together the greatest rebuild starter package in the history of the NBA.
Right, but here's the thing. The greatest rebuild starter package in the history of the NBA didn't leave the starting gates because Sam Presti was riding that horse. It left the starting gates because Kawhi Leonard was riding that horse. And but that's the point I'm trying to make.
The point I'm making is I don't think it leaves that horse doesn't leave the barn unless both parties are willing. And Sam Presti was willing because he knew this was a luxury tax team that was not going anywhere. And Paul George was willing, maybe for the same reasons, that he knew, I've just gone to the playoffs twice with Russell Westbrook and lost in the first round. This is about what I can do here. With Kawhi in LA, I might be able to do a lot more.
Right. So
and the other thing about this, because I want to dovetail off his point. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, 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 O'Reilly.